Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Sarah Williams reporting. The leaders of more than 50 nations who met in Washington about nuclear security and terrorism agreed on the actions they will take together to reduce the risks facing the world. But President Barack Obama says the hard work starts now, building on the summit's accomplishments. Obama told Americans Saturday that the global effort to keep nuclear materials secure has made important progress.
All of South America is now free of these deadly materials. Central Europe and Southeast Asia are on track to be free of them later this year. That means that as terrorists and criminal gangs look around for the deadly ingredients for a nuclear device, vast regions of the world are now off limits.
Summarizing the summit, Obama said no terrorist group has yet succeeded in obtaining a nuclear device or producing a dirty bomb using radioactive materials. However, he added that Al-Qaeda, the Islamic State, and other terror groups certainly have tried to do so. The U.S. and other world powers may be experiencing a heightened sense of urgency in securing nuclear material and sites from terrorists following the March 22nd attacks in Brussels. The Turkish Coast Guard intercepted more than 60 migrants and refugees in the Aegean Sea as they tried to reach the Greek island of Lesbos Saturday. The group, including Syrians, was transported to the western Turkish town of Dikili in compliance with an EU-Turkey deal that takes effect on April 4th. Dikili is one of the designated centers for migrants who are sent back to Turkey. Some 300 anti-migrant protesters in Dikili demonstrated Saturday against registration desks in refugee camps. This is VOA News. Officials in Syria said Saturday that the army had found a mass grave off the northeastern edge of Palmyra after the city was recaptured from Islamic State militants. Authorities said the grave contained at least 40 bodies, including women and three children. Some of the bodies were beheaded, others were reportedly shot. The London-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights confirmed the discovery of the mass grave. The monitoring group also said that Islamic State had executed close to 300 people during their nearly 10-month occupation of Palmyra and buried them on the outskirts of the city. Syrian government forces, backed by heavy Russian air support, drove Islamic State out of Palmyra last Sunday. Brussels' main airport will partially reopen for passenger flights Sunday with much tighter security, 12 days after its departure hall was damaged by suicide bombers. Speaking to reporters Saturday, Zaventem Airport Chief Executive Arnaud Feist confirmed that three Brussels Airlines flights will depart from Belgium's main airport. 32 people were killed and dozens were wounded in the attacks on March 22nd. Kenya marks the one-year anniversary of the brutal al-Shabaab attack on Nairobi's Garissa University that killed 148 people, most of them students. Families of the victims held a memorial service in Nairobi Saturday. Mohammed Youssef reports.
In central Nairobi, a handful of parents met in a public park to remember the victims of the Garissa University attack. The parents lit candles and one after the other stood to talk about their loss and to give words of encouragement to help others overcome their loss. In April 2015, a group of armed men from the militant group Al-Shabaab stormed the university before sunrise and started killing the students. Al-Shabaab militants said they attacked the campus in retaliation for Kenyan military operations in Somalia. The siege at Garissa went on for at least 12 hours. Kenyan security forces were severely criticized for their slow response. According to local media, it took them at least 7 hours to reach the university. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Heavy fighting has broken out between regional rivals Armenia and Azerbaijan in the 10th separatist region of Nagorno-Karabakh during a clash serious enough to warrant the attention of Russian President Vladimir Putin. At least one child is believed to have been killed in the fighting between the two former Soviet republics that broke out late Friday. Each side blames the other for starting the fighting, and both sides say the other has sustained heavy losses. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
I went to Dr. Wesley's home yesterday evening at around 6 o'clock, and I found many policemen still deployed, and I found three roadblocks.
Uganda's main opposition leader, Kizza Besigye, remains under house arrest. This, despite orders from the Inspector General of Police for security operatives to withdraw from his home.
In Canada, the main concern is the exchange rate and inflation. You cannot fix the exchange rate if you are not in control of what is produced in the country.
The Ghanaian Central Bank chief steps down amid criticism over the country's lackluster economic performance.
A lot of armed individuals are shaking down Africans for money because there's no bank or money transfer system that allows them to send their earnings home, so they're carrying cash.
And the International Organization for Migration reports a large number of sub-Saharan Africans arrives in Italy this year. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Uganda's main opposition leader, Dr. Kizza Besigye, remains under house arrest. He was the presidential candidate of the Ugandan Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC, in elections last February. He continues to be detained despite an order from the Inspector General of Police. Wafula Ogutu, spokesman for the FDC, told me the government's continued actions against him is illegal and a gross violation of his human and constitutional rights.
I went to Dr. Besigye's home yesterday evening at around 6 o'clock, and I found many policemen still deployed, and I found three roadblocks on his land to his home. And I stayed there with Dr. Besigye up to midnight last night. And when I came out, there were roadblocks. Even there was one who was now closed at his gate. And I was thoroughly checked. And my car was thoroughly checked. And I'm sure the policemen are still there. Because I had even deployed more policemen yesterday. The local commander was quoted saying that he had not yet received a formal order from his boss to withdraw his soldiers or his policemen from Dr. Besigye's compound, I mean, land or premises.
So as we speak at the moment, they are still there at his house and the roadblocks are still there after you held discussions with Kizza Besigye a while ago?
Yes, they are still there, unless they have been removed an hour ago, but they are still there. Even this morning, they are still there. And this is not the first time the Inspector General of Police is saying Dr. Besigye is not under house arrest, they are not under arrest, because he had done that several times, and he tells the public is different from what happens on the ground.
Actually, they said that Dr. Besigye is a national security threat and that he tries to undermine the integrity, the territorial integrity of the country because of his political pronouncement about defying public order and not following rules.
But Dr. Besigye has never broken any law. If he had broken any law for the last 15 years, they have been taking him to court. They have not proved even one single case against him. They simply detain him. Everything Dr. Besigye does, he does it according to law. So to defy lawful, unlawful orders, our constitution protects that. It guarantees that if you do something wrong, if you are breaking the law, even if you are the state, if you are violating our constitution, even if you are the state, our constitution says you can defy that. The public, the masses, the people can defy that. So Dr. Besigye has not broken any law. And to say defiance, actually, it is ironical that the government which is ruling us, their name is called, the party which is ruling Uganda, is called National Resistance Movement. And they took the name Resistance when they went to topple an elected government. They went to wage a war in the bush and toppled it militarily or violently. And that name has remained Resistance. And we don't see the difference between the resistance and the defiance. So we are defying the wrong things they are doing. And so why should they resist? But they cut a line and go to defy what the wrong things they are doing.
What is the next line of action for your party to take regarding his continued detention, basically, under house arrest?
Well, it's to defy what they are doing, because, first of all, the government, the judges, so the courts have told the government or the police to withdraw their soldiers from, or policemen, or just the people from around Dr. Besigye. They have told them that it is unlawful to detain doctor in his home, which is not a gazetted prison. They have told him they are violating his human rights. The court has said all those things. But the government doesn't care about things like that. Mr. Museveni, he doesn't care. He does what he thinks is right for what suits him. So what can we do? What we want to do is to mobilize people and defy that and continue fighting, struggling against that.
Wafula Ogutu is the spokesman for Ugandan Opposition Forum for Democratic Change, or FDC. He spoke with me from the capital, Kampala. Meanwhile, the Ugandan Supreme Court rejected a challenge to the validity of the presidential election. It issued a ruling on Thursday that secured President Yoweri Museveni a mandate for another five-year term. Mr. Museveni may now face a difficult period amid rising discontent over opposition suppression, including the home incarceration of the main opposition leader, Dr. Chisa Besigye. Nicholas Opayo is a human rights lawyer and political analyst. My colleague Douglas Impuga reached him in Kampala for his reaction on the Supreme Court ruling.
My reaction to this ruling is what many Ugandans are expressing here in Kampala and around the country. Is that nobody is surprised, really, that the court upheld the election of President Yoweri Museveni for a fifth term in office. Everybody expected this to happen because of several reasons. Among others is the lack of trust in the judicial process to overturn an election petition of this nature. So I'm not surprised, like many Ugandans, was expecting this kind of ruling. And nobody is celebrating and nobody is sad, because this was really expected of the Supreme Court here in Uganda.
Some analysts have faulted the Supreme Court for having placed the burden on the petitioner to prove his case without doing a thorough inquiry into the election process. Is that a fair criticism?
I think that what the ruling of the court represents is a bigger political crisis in Uganda. That you have a political system that is hugely unfair, that is hugely in favor of a sitting head of state who has been in power for the last 30 years. But for me, more fundamentally also, what this ruling represents is that the legal process in Uganda, because of structural problems, because of human resource problems in the judiciary, because of lack of independence, is unable to provide the safety valve that a Supreme Court should provide in matters such as an election petition. The Supreme Court has demonstrated that it is severely incapable, it is handicapped, because in terms of scope and in terms of time required to determine a matter such as this, the court is just unable to do so. So the court has just reaffirmed the fact that the court has abdicated from its duty to be the neutral arbiter in an electoral contestation. So the court has left a bigger political question in this country unresolved. And that question now has to be resolved by the people of this country, not in the court process. And these problems are an electoral system that is completely biased, an electoral system that is run by a commission that has been declared by the court itself as incompetent, grossly incompetent and inefficient, an electoral system that is skewed towards an individual. President Museveni only organizes elections in Uganda because he knows he can win it. So I think that is a bigger question that Ugandans have to determine. The second thing that Ugandans have to determine is a bigger question of the reform, not just of electoral laws, but the electoral system, so that electoral systems are able to deliver results that represent the wider will of the people of this country. As it is now, it does not.
This is the court that says, faults the Electoral Commission and charges for being gross, incompetent and inefficient, talks about the failure of the Commission to deliver voting materials in time, and says that there are cases of non-compliance. And then in the same breath says the president was validly elected. How do you reconcile those contradictions?
Well, what the court has done is to maintain a standard that was set by the court in the last two election petitions, the one of 2001 and the one of 2006. That standard is that essentially you are allowed to break the law, to flout electoral rules, provided that flouting, that those violations do not substantially affect the results of the election. So the standard for nullification of the elections of Uganda is just extremely ridiculous. In effect, what the court has said, that you can kill a few people, you can arrest a few people, you can deliver voting materials late in some areas, provided that does not affect the results in any substantial way.
Nicholas Opayo is a Ugandan human rights lawyer and political analyst. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga from Kampala. Business executives have described as scary Zimbabwe's threat to shut down foreign-owned companies that did not meet a deadline to transfer majority stakes to local people. The country threatened to shut down the companies if they did not comply with the Black Economic Empowerment Program. For VOA, Patricia Mudadigwa reports from the Zimbabwean capital, Harare.
Executives who spoke to Studio 7 said threats being made by the government to shut down their companies if they do not follow the law are counterproductive, as Zimbabwe is currently attempting to court international finance institutions to give it loans for resuscitating the ailing economy. Self-confessed President Robert Mugabe supporter, Reverend Obadiah Msindo, who is also director of Destiny for Africa Network, said the government is getting it all wrong.
I don't fully agree with the idea of the closure of companies. I would advise the Minister of Indigenization to use a different approach. Given the situation where we are in, think of the employees. We have serious high rate of unemployment in this country. If it is the decision of the cabinet, there is a need for them to review their position.
Musindo's views were echoed by John Mofukare, Executive Director of the Employers Confederation of Zimbabwe.
It gets to the point now where people are just in a state of shock. And at this moment, I don't see too much panic around, because I think people have now just taken the attitude that what will be. If we are going to be closed down, then we will be closed down. If anything else is going to happen, then just let it be. So people have gone beyond panicking. They are just passive now, just accepting their fate, whatever that fate is going to be.
Ben Frith, a member of the Commercial Farmers Union of Zimbabwe, said it was possible that Zimbabwe would take the drastic measures to shut down the companies that have failed to comply, as has been the case on white commercial farms since 2000.
We've seen it happen with the farms. We believe that it could never happen the way it's happened on the farms, where the law is just disregarded, where they just chase everyone off, where they put people in jail for committing the crime of farming. We believe that could not happen in a country, you know, but it happened.
However, Dr. Shingi Munyeza, a businessman, said indications are that a lot of companies have submitted their plans to the National Indigenization and Economic Empowerment Board. He believes this process is not retrogressive.
But a lot of people have been submitting their returns to NIB, and NIB has come out to say, look, they will consider all and make sure that everybody else is processed properly. So we take the cue from NIB. I'm confident and hopeful that we will not be retrogressive in implementing indigenization.
The Zimbabwe Investment Authority could not be reached for comment. Reports say at least 35 companies have so far submitted their indigenization plans following threats by the government to forcibly shut down non-complying firms. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Patricia Mdadigwa.
Ghana's central bank chief stepped down Friday amid criticism about the country's lackluster economic performance. From the Ghanaian capital, Accra, Francisca Kakra-Forsen reports for VOA on the tough task ahead for his successor.
Henry Kofi Wampa, was named governor of Ghana's central bank in 2012 to address the country's fiscal deficit, rising inflation, continuous currency devaluation, and ballooning debt stock. Wampa leaves his post 4 months before the end of his four-year mandate amid criticism over his performance, though some concede he was dealt a difficult hand. Ghanaian economist Felix Asante says the new central bank governor must be bold on checking government spending.
Certainly. That person should be able to say to the sitting government that, no, there's no money, so I cannot honour the check.
Wampa assumed his post amid high deficits in 2012. The country had spent a lot on elections that year, including rolling out a new biometric voter system. Ghana is headed to the polls again in November, and more high spending is expected. Asante says that is just one of the factors outside the central bank's control.
In Ghana, the main concern is the exchange rate and inflation. You cannot fix the exchange rate if you are not in control of what is produced in the country. You cannot encourage private sector to export. The economy should bounce back into its form where we can produce enough to export and earn foreign exchange. If we don't do that and we keep on importing, every governor will come and will have such a problem.
Inflation has climbed since 2012, though in February, it's dropped slightly to 18.5% from 19% in January. Ghana is one of the world's top producers of gold and cocoa. The country discovered oil in 2007 and in 2011 was named the fastest growing economy in the world. Ghana was a darling of the Africa Rising narrative, but commodities-based growth has done little for Ghanaians' standard of living, and Ghana's economy began to stall in 2013. In Accra, people say their paychecks buy less and less at the market, and even as economists advise the country to export more, exporters like Kweku, a local handicraft businessman, say inflation is a problem.
When my remittances are coming in, I cannot withdraw and go back and exchange at the same foreign rate that I bought to you for the production. Now I have to go and exchange the money at the controlled rate. For every dollar that I earn, I lose some cedis on it. With time, I'll be eating up all my capital.
Ghana's president will appoint a new central bank governor. Wampa's first deputy, Melissa Na, has taken the helm in the interim. Francisca Kakrafosin, for VOA News, Accra.
The International Organization for Migration reports a large number of sub-Saharan Africans have been arriving in Italy this year. They come mainly from Nigeria, Mali, Gambia and Senegal. The IOM says most of the migrants are coming from Libya on overcrowded rubber dinghies. VOA Lisa Schlein reports from the IOM headquarters in Geneva.
The International Organization for Migration reports at least 170,000 refugees and migrants have crossed the Mediterranean Sea from Turkey into Europe this year, 8 times more than the number recorded for the first 3 months of 2015. While the numbers heading for Italy from Libya pale in comparison, IOM says they are growing. It says more than 18,000 migrants and refugees have arrived, an increase of more than 8,000 compared to the same period last year. It says 90% of the arrivals are from sub-Saharan Africa. None are from Syria. IOM spokesman Joel Millman says the migration is unusual in that most of the new arrivals do not come from states experiencing conflict or famine. He says the smuggling industry is behind this so-called middle-class migration phenomenon. He says smugglers are taking advantage of the chaotic Syrian refugee crisis in Europe to cajole African customers into undertaking the dangerous trek across the Sahara Desert to Libya. He describes their technique.
This is a really good time to go to Europe because of the distraction and because of the Libyan chaos, you know, made the many opportunities for smuggling gangs. So authorities in those countries sadly reported lots of people were selling taxi cabs and livestock and small businesses to raise the couple thousand dollars to cross the Sahara and then get up to Libya. We see that traffic absolutely continuing this year.
Milman says many migrants who survive the dangerous journey across the Sahara receive abusive treatment from the authorities when they arrive in Libya. They also become prey to nefarious criminal elements.
A lot of armed individuals are shaking down Africans for money because there's no bank or money transfer system that allows them to send their earnings home, so they're carrying cash. A lot of those people end up on boats, and a lot of them end up on our planes going home.
Milman says the IOM regularly repatriates migrants who feel threatened and are concerned about the deteriorating security situation in Libya. Over the past 15 months, he says the IOM has transported nearly 1,900 people, the vast majority from Africa, to their home countries. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Ngong Dam site is one of the largest landfills in Kenya. Newborn babies are often found there among their trash. Many of the infants are discovered alive and put up for adoption, but not all. For VOA, Ryle Ombo reports from Ngong.
Chadak Musioka has been sorting garbage at the Ngong Dam site for 20 years. He keeps a log of how many containers he fills for sale to recycling companies, but since 2013, he has also kept another list. 60 newborn babies, it reads, were found in the trash in 2015, up from the 12 he recorded in 2013. He says one morning he came to work early and a teacher walking by heard a baby cry. She listened carefully and found a box with a baby inside. She was in a hurry, so she handed over the baby to him. He says they went to the police and called a local children's home, and the baby was taken to hospital for a medical examination. We are poor, he says. We cannot take care of such a child. The 10-acre dump takes in garbage from all over Nairobi. He says it's nearly impossible to track where the babies come from or pinpoint which garbage truck the infant came in on. Musioka says the incidents are due to carelessness and poor parenting. He says a family must have a strong foundation and raise its girls well. The mother, he says, plays a very important role. But others say men also should shoulder responsibility. Jacqueline Udoni was gang-raped as a teenager in 2002. She says she contemplated throwing the baby away because she could not deal with the stigma. She says the first thing that happens when you get pregnant without planning is that you hate yourself, especially if you're raped like she was. She says she didn't know whose baby it was. She kept seeing the different faces of these men. And she says she felt like she was carrying a dog, sometimes garbage. Mudhani ultimately gave up her baby for adoption. Mama Zipora founded the Huruma Children's Home in Ngong. She takes in some of the babies found at the nearby dump site. She says those babies are too young to remember how they were abandoned.
After 6 months, after nobody comes to claim them, we get a letter from the police and we contact the adoption society to find homes for them. They are in their homes now with parents who are caring for them.
But not all babies are so lucky. In the 2015 annual crime report, Kenya's Inspector General of Police reported a 55% increase in infanticide cases. Based on complaints filed at police stations, the offense carries a maximum sentence of life in prison. It is unclear what is driving that spike, but experts say one possible solution is to help women avoid unwanted pregnancies. Kenyan public hospitals now offer free reproductive health services. This includes free consultations on family planning and distribution of contraceptives such as condoms. But non-governmental organizations working with youth say that it is not enough. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Ngong, Kenya.
Next on Let's Talk. Technology, does it affect education? Join host Sande Shomari and his guests discussing technology's impact on education. Let's Talk
comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotty, in Washington. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. Right now, it's time for music from our African collection. Enjoy what we have for you today.
I celebrate, I jubilate. Not time to complain. Why you not time to complain? Yeah, I celebrate, I jubilate. See, not time to complain. Why you not time to complain? Pop some bottles and just feel okay. Everybody make you feel okay. Whoa, sexy ladies just they feel like it. Yeah, yeah. Make sure you just got to feel okay.
Sweet me for my head, ooh. For my head, ooh. If you the best, now for your head, ooh. For your head, ooh. The thing you depend on for your head, ooh. Softly, softly, kill yourself. For my people, and make me the jubilate, ooh. Me, I they feel like I'm illegate, ooh. I say, whatever I am. Me and my fans with the Burugawa. Ah, Chikwebuka. In my life, in Kenjika. Oh my God, I'm falling. Hey, I'm falling. Every day my phone is ringing. Hey, money is calling. Yeah. Every night and day, I swear I'm happy. How I got here today, me, I swear I'm happy. God, I beg for only one chance. And you give me plenty more chance. Oh my God, I only one chance. I need chance, I make them to dance. Oh, oh. Make me take them softly to celebrate you. Celebrate you. Only my corner, I'm on my day. Enter head, you. Enter head, yo. Any work I you do now for your head, yo. Mastercraft to the beach, they do the enter head, yo. Every night and day, I swear I'm happy. How I got here today, me, I swear I'm happy. God, I beg for only one chance, and you give me plenty more chance. I beg for only one chance, now the chance they make them to dance.
I celebrate, I jubilate. No time to complain, why you not got time to complain? Yeah, I celebrate, I jubilate. See, no time to complain. Boy, you know, got time to complain.
Pop some bottles and just feel okay. Everybody make you feel okay. Whoa, sexy ladies just they feel like you. Make sure you just got to feel okay. Whoa,
you think they sweet me for my head, ooh. For my head, ooh. If you the best, I'm on your head, ooh. For your head, ooh. You the plan up on your head, oh. Softly, softly, kill yourself. For my people, make me the jubilate, oh. Me, I they feel like I'm illegate, oh.
If you carry chicken, let's like, for my head, yo. If you drink it, rosé, now like, for my head, yo. If you, now for my head, yo. But if you scatter this place, now like, for your head, yo. Every night and day, I swear I'm happy. How I got here today, me, I swear I'm happy. God, I beg for only one chance, and you give me plenty more chance. I beg for only one chance, now the chance they make them to dance. Pop some bottles and just feel okay. Everybody make you feel okay. Whoa. Sexy ladies just they feel like they. Make sure you just got to feel okay.
Yeah.
right. No time for dolling, no time to slack. This song I just sing will make you high. Just move to the beat, twang. Everybody come and make a leap. Like you in your own body. Aye, 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 aye. Everybody down, 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 down. Go down low.
La la low.
Let me see you go down low. Cause after today you go blow like bomb. First I ask who get that thing. Then I start to be crazy, yeah. Now when they do olele, 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 olele. Everybody down, 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 down. Go down low,
la la low, low.
Let me see you go down low.
Canteen. Now, we don't upgrade the matter. Daily and weekly and monthly and quarter. Now, we don't talk to butter. Family is smaller, we know get quanta. That we just say Yoruba. Make them no go forget, say Madonna Baba.
Oh,
Shake body. Shake body. Shake body. Shake body. Baby name, yeah.
nobody far from me. Do you know my baby? Her name is Banya. That in Africa lady, yo. Banya, oh my Banya, they scatter my brain, yo. Beautiful lady, yo. That in Africa lady, yo. I sing in the song for Banya. And I dance in the dance for Banya, oh. I would do anything for Banya.
Anything, yeah.
And I thank you the Lord for Banya, yeah.
My baby name, Banya, Banya, Banya. Oh, what is your baby name? Banya, 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 Banya. I request for my baby girl, Banya, 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 Banya. Banya scatter the fluff from me, Banya, Banya, Banya. She's my fine baby, baby, oh. She's my African lady, yeah.
Lady, oh.
Banya sweet like a chocolate. When she come around, she heavyweight. She a dance, she a move. Baby, I am. What is my baby name?
Banya, Banya, Banya.
What is your baby name?
Banya, Banya, Banya.
I request for my baby girl.
Banya, Banya, Banya.
Banya scatter the fluff for me.
Banya. And I thank you the Lord for Banya. You must go by for you.
Abi,
hey.
Aya, what is my baby name?
Sichalo si, sichalo si, sichalo si, ndi boss.
jealousy.
Dance, dance.
Abande, unobula mumbi. Zingubame, kalimunde kenange. Kwenzi jukira moche mfuti, endo satakubana. Acholeka otada, nebakende kakanga. Itali musana, oh mama, oh la la, yeah. Oh agariba, oh agariba,
kati toba kona chungamba, jango mziki tugusambe, kambe toba kona chungamba, jango enu tuichangi,
ayelelelelele, ayelelelelelele,
lekansi me,
nizina mumama, unamu wajisera, ato mziki zuri sana,
lekansi me,
Zina,
without you, my darling, I go suffer. Just within my
And that was Music from the Continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor William Eagle, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and engineer for today, Cornelius Tino, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, rats don't dance in the doorway of cats. I'm your host, Peter Clotte in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In March, U.S. Secretary of Energy Ernest Moniz, accompanied by senior officials from the Department of Energy's National Nuclear Security Administration, known as the NNSA, the Department of Defense, and a host of international VIPs, participated with the China Atomic Energy Authority, the CAEA, to commission China's new Nuclear Security Center of Excellence, the COE. The commissioning was held in Beijing, China, on March 18th. The COE will address China's domestic nuclear security training requirements, provide a forum for bilateral and regional best practices exchanges, and serve as a venue for demonstrating advanced technologies related to nuclear security. The COE opening is a major achievement for both countries, occurring as it did in advance of the 2016 Nuclear Security Summit. This Center of Excellence is a world-class facility for Chinese, regional, and international nuclear security training and technical exchanges. The Department of Energy partnership with China on this effort has been exemplary, and we look forward to continued engagement on nuclear security best practices, said Secretary Moniz. The United States works bilaterally with partner countries and international organizations to enhance the security of nuclear materials worldwide. Protection of nuclear materials is a key pillar of President Obama's nuclear security agenda. The NNSA Office of Defense Nuclear Nonproliferation, or DNN, supports this strategy by working with international partners to improve their capacity to secure nuclear material. This is achieved through support for regulations and oversight, enhanced nuclear security culture, best practices training, training centers and technical exchanges, and select upgrades to facility security and accounting systems. The two countries' nuclear security agencies have a long-term collaboration that has supported more than 50 training and technical exchanges on nuclear security best practices. These trainings form the basis for continued collaboration on developing indigenous Chinese curriculum for the COE. Beyond China, DNN is actively engaged with current and planned COEs in Japan, Republic of Korea, and Kazakhstan. DNN works closely with the International Atomic Energy Agency, as well as bilaterally with over 21 partner countries across Asia, Africa, and the Americas. The United States is proud to work with China and other nations to ensure that commercial nuclear power and radiation sources are safe and secure.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.